Don't worry, we will continue to talk about EVs. I know we had a couple more calls come in, and we'll pick up the conversation in just a little bit. But I do want to talk to Gary Fallon, who is one of our employment attorneys here on the morning show. And he also actually teaches employment law up at Quinnipiac University. And interestingly enough, I thought of Quinnipiac with this story. Did you hear earlier this month about Dartmouth's basketball team voting to unionize? Immediately when I heard this, I thought of two universities here in Connecticut. Not to discredit Fairfield U or Sacred Heart or many of our other universities, but certainly UConn as well as Quinnipiac. Because we have some NCAA champions at both of these colleges, and Gary happens to, again, be a professor at one of them. So, Gary, I wanted to talk to you about this, and I know we've discussed this type of topic actually around sports before, but before, you and I have talked about like brand, name, likeness, all of that when it comes to the players. Let's discuss this decision that Dartmouth made, and I'd love to get your professional perspective on this.
Okay, well, the outcome was based, or the fact that the team is now voted to unionize 13-2 last week. It's based on a decision by the National Labor Relations Board, a regional director, which concluded that the players were employees as defined by U.S. labor law. Now, there's been a trend in that direction with the 2015 case involving the Northwestern University football team, as well as the name, image, and likeness rules that have changed, and a NLRB general counsel memo taking the position that college athletes may be employees. So it was kind of a culmination of that. Now, the interesting thing, though, is the one, you know, our most high-profile school, UConn would not be affected by this decision because they are a state university, and the National Labor Relations Board is the federal agency enforcing U.S. labor laws in private with private employers.
Interesting.
It would affect somebody like Quinnipiac, though.
Okay. So I appreciate the distinction because obviously myself and so many of my listeners, as soon as we heard about Dartmouth, which is why I contacted you right away, because when I was reading this, that's what it sort of sounded like, was that you're looking at these players as being employees. They're making money for the college, even though they are students there. They're looked at as making money for the college. So okay. So you've differentiated that this is a state college. They would not qualify under essentially this entity that has allowed Dartmouth to even vote for this, but Quinnipiac could. And so I want to know what your thoughts are on the idea of this unionized team at Dartmouth, and do you think something like this would come to like a Quinnipiac?
I think it's going to take time. This was kind of the first shot across the bow in a sense. Because it's just the legal process. This was only a regional director decision. It will then go, this issue is being appealed to the full 5-member National Labor Relations Board.
Oh, it is?
At that point, yes. And
oh,
then
wow.
At that point, it will be appealed. Whoever loses will appeal it to the federal courts. And then it very likely may end up at the U.S. Supreme Court. So that timetable, I think we're looking at about 18 months. Now, the likelihood is between now and then, there will be more schools that unionize. I know the players from Dartmouth are trying to do, with other Ivy League basketball teams, trying to persuade them to unionize. I think it'll start to affect other private institutions. But what it may be is a push that would affect somebody like UConn is where if NCAA thinks, okay, this is inevitable, let's get control of this beforehand, is where they take the position to allow unions to proceed.
Okay. I'm so glad you said this. And again, we have Gary Fallon, who is here, who's our employment attorney. And we'll talk obviously more about, I would love to get your perspective, especially on the idea of players being employees, looked at as employees rather. That was going to be my question. So even though UConn, being a state college, cannot fall under what the National Labor Relations Board protects. Again, this is an independent federal agency. They protect the rights of private sector employees. And again, these are private colleges. So UConn wouldn't qualify under the NLRB. But would there be another entity? And so you're saying NCAA could very well say, hey, we know they're going down this track. And so maybe we follow suit with that. So there is a possibility if Dartmouth does get the green light after this whole legal process and does get to unionize, there is a possibility that even colleges like UConn could also do that just under a different entity, not the NLRB. Am I understanding that?
That's correct. And we saw the same sort of thing with the, name, image and likeness, NIL. Is where eventually the NCAA, they stopped fighting it and just said, okay, well, we got to come up with kind of guidance and rules and regulations governing it. And I think that could, that will have a major effect. The other thing it'll have a major effect is who gets elected president in this November.
Earlier this month, Dartmouth College's men's basketball team voted overwhelmingly to unionize. So what does this mean for other powerhouse sports colleges like our very own UConn in Quinnipiac? Well, we are talking this morning to employment attorney and Quinnipiac law professor Gary Fallon about whether college athletes should even be seen as employees and what factors play a role in being able to vote to unionize. You had just started mentioning, Gary, that the upcoming presidential election will have a huge impact on the future of college sports teams unionizing. Why do you say that?
Well, if the NLRB as a federal agency, if they have five members and whoever is the president, that party will be able to have three members appoint, or the president will be able to appoint three of the members. So it's if Donald Trump is elected, it will change the current makeup. So there'll be three Republican members. And the likelihood is, just as they did in 2016 to 2020, you'll see a lot more policy positions that favor employers, and this will inevitably be one of those positions where they say that players cannot unionize.
Gary, I know you and I were both sports fans, but I want to know, in your professional opinion, as an employment attorney, do you think it's a good idea that teams, college teams, are unionizing? Really, I think one of the bigger questions, do you see college athletes as employees?
As a lawyer, just on the legal issues of are they employees, I think they are. The focus on whether or not somebody is an employee turns on the issue of control. And as illustrated, it discussed in much more detail in this decision, that colleges have extensive amounts of control over their players, to the extent of things like what courses they take, what times the classes are, what they can do and not do when they're on the road. They are controlled much more than most employees. So from a straight legal standpoint, I think they are. Now, as a sports fan, there are definite downsides. One is that anytime there's a major change, you're going to see negative aspects to it. I think of, like, last week, Nick Saban, the retired Alabama football coach, said that, he kind of got – one of the reasons he retired or what contributed to his decision is he said players at the end of the year were asking two major questions. One, how much am I going to get money from the NIL, name, image, and likeness? And if not, if I don't get enough, or if I'm not going to be a starter, I'm going to transfer and go into the transfer portal. So we're definitely seeing downsides. The other problem, I think, with the NIL is the star players like Paige Beckers, get major deals. Not most players. What I like, if the players do unionize, at least all the players will be being paid something, so it's more fair. They're all doing the same amount of work, putting in the same amount of hours. So in that way, I think that would be a positive development. But it is going to make, it's going to change the equation, because sports is all about teamwork. And once you become an employee, then it's more focused on individuals. So,
right, your performance, what you're making. It makes it really, really challenging. That's so true, Gary. And I think that's why there's continued to be such debate around NIL, the name, image, and likeness, because, again, the dynamics of the team become very difficult. The way a coach is able to keep that team in agreement, be able to gel and actually produce results is very challenging. And you know, it does certainly – I mean, I do understand the question of, you know, what could colleges do? If they're making insane amounts of money, like when you look at UConn and you look at this year was their highest number of applications on record for the 2024 year. They had over 52,000 applications for their incoming freshman class. And they're only going to take like 4,000 to 5,000 of them. If you're really going to think it has nothing to do with them being NCAA champions last spring, that's crazy. So should colleges be doing more to basically reward their players for giving them such great success? That's, you know, are we going the right route? I don't think the question is, like, should they be compensated? I think it's how do you do it fairly without really ruining the dynamics of the team, and that's challenging. That's a hard balance to strike.
School or sports teams have become one of the biggest marketing tools that colleges have,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the reasons why such a focus, not only marketing, but just alumni donations. Sports teams bring in a lot of money to universities, so you know, other people who work there, they're paid. Why not college athletes? Now, many of, you know, the big schools, they get scholarships. In the Ivy League, like Dartmouth, they do not. And also, unlike major sports programs, Dartmouth, their basketball team lost money. But one of the things that was made addressed in this decision is whether or not the team makes a profit for the university doesn't affect the legal decision of whether or not they are an employee. So this is a major, you know, development in the sports arena.
Yeah, it really is. And we certainly are going to see how it plays out. I mean, the other aspect that we never talk about is I always wonder, like, so UConn football, UConn has so many other sports as well. And I'm wondering if you've got one team unionizing, again, this isn't UConn, but what does that mean? I would just imagine that other teams are like, hey, what about us? We know we're not making you anywhere near the money that the basketball program is, but why aren't we being considered employees? I don't know. It's tricky. And so I know I definitely want to continue to follow this story. I know you are as well, Gary, and I thank you so much for your perspective on this and also your professional insight. It's really interesting. We'll see what happens.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right. Gary Fallon again, who is our employment attorney on The Morning Show. He's with Mitchell and Sheehan professionally, and he also is a Quinnipiac law professor. And we're talking about Dartmouth's decision earlier this month for their basketball team voting to unionize and what it could mean for some Connecticut colleges, especially our big sports colleges like UConn and Quinnipiac.